It's all about people. And if you take care of people, both the people you work with and the customers you serve, then you'll do well in retail.
Hello, and welcome to Working with me, Dan Doriani, hosting a podcast where we explore faith, work, culture, and the way believers can make a difference in their corner of the world. Well, today I'm delighted to have Mike Duke as my guest. Mike had the very striking privilege of being the CEO, the worldwide CEO of Walmart from 2009 to 2013. That means he had 2.2 million employees under him. It means that there were 11,000 stores that he was responsible for. It means that he was in charge of a lot of money. Walmart at that time and still today, I believe this is correct, Mike, would be about the 21st biggest economy in the world if Walmart were a nation. It would be a little bit bigger than Argentina and Poland. That's what I found. So that's a pretty big economy. Right now, Mike has retired. We may talk about that in a little bit, but he was at Walmart starting in 1995. Before that, he was with May Company. That had a output of about 15 billion, Walmart 500 billion plus. So that was still a big company. Mike, how have I failed to introduce you? You're also an industrial engineer. What else would people want to know so they can understand who they're listening to today?
Well, I think, Dan, you've already gone too far. And I think just knowing that I'm a regular guy is what people would want to know the most.
Well, that's true. I maybe people would like to know that I met you handing out bulletins in a church where I was speaking once. And, right. And you know, we smiled and said, hello, hello. And then the person I was with said, by the way, he was the CEO of Walmart. And he said when he joined a Bible study I was in, somebody asked him what he does or what he did. And your answer was, well, I used to work at Walmart, which is a pretty humble way of introducing yourself.
Well, my wife and I still enjoy greeting and serving at church. So it was great to meet you that day and look forward to many more opportunities to greet and meet others as they come in the doors.
That's great. So we have a motto at this little organization called the Center for Faith and Work in St. Louis. And that motto is changing our corner of the world for the Lord. Can you just give a word? I mean, how did you try to change your corner of the world? Most corners are small. Your corner was a little bigger than most. What did you try to do to make the world a slightly better place as a result of your faith? What are a couple things that you tried to live out?
Well, I think first thing I would do every day is to give God thanks for the opportunity that I had. So, you know, clearly God placed me in opportune positions, not only in the last job I had as CEO, but really throughout my career, the opportunity to work with people. And I thought if anyone that I come in contact with, whether it's associates that work for the company or customers of the company, if I can have some small positive impact on other people that I touch and come in contact with, then maybe God has given me that opportunity. And I've been blessed, I think, many, many times by that opportunity.
Yeah, and somehow when you say that, I'm reminded of something I heard you say on another podcast. And that is that you had mentors and you also had supervisors. And at one point, one of your supervisors inspected an area of a store you were overseeing and said to you, Mr. Duke, retailing may not be for you. Now, he couldn't have been more wrong because you were a young man and you were in retailing your whole life. But maybe tell us a little bit about the mentors and, you know, maybe even critics and how you learned from people that helped you form yourself as a leader.
You know, and it's interesting. That was very early in my career. I guess I'd been out of Georgia Tech maybe a couple of years and was still learning retail. And when that particular supervisor had that comment, and I will clarify that probably that supervisor was not really a mentor, but I also learned things from him. I've always said I think I've learned things from every boss that I've ever had in my working career. From the mentors, I learned a lot of things about leadership, integrity, doing business the right way. But from some supervisors, I also learned what not to do. And also, when I talk to sometimes young people, and they'll describe a situation where maybe they've got a boss that's not the ideal leader. And I just tell them to count their blessings. I said, because you maybe learn more from someone about what not to do than you often will from someone who's doing it right and teaching you the other way, because you'll tend to remember what not to do. And I guess I remembered that day early in my career. That's probably why I've talked about it a couple of times is, you know, that probably wasn't the best example of leadership. It didn't provide the most encouragement to me. Fortunately, I stayed in retail. That wasn't what caused me to leave my retail career. And I think I had other mentors that then helped me along the way.
Yeah, that was a harsh remark, obviously. And, you know, clearly he didn't quite have you pegged. I mean, there was one voice that said, this may not be for you, and many, many voices that said, please work for us throughout your career. So sometimes we can learn from a rebuke, even a rebuke that's somewhat unfair.
Exactly. We sure can.
Yeah. So you were the head of Walmart, the CEO of Walmart, during a time of rapid change, certainly the move over toward non-big box stores and to the I'll let you describe it. But, you know, your number one competitor was probably Amazon, and your number one challenge was probably negotiating that switch out of the geographically founded store to other ways of delivering merchandise. What's it like to be in the middle of massive change in an industry?
Well, first of all, it's a great challenge, of course. And I guess I enjoy change, though. And so it's one of those that probably I, throughout that period of time, it was where I think God placed me at a right time and a right place. When I moved into that job and it was actually announced that I was going to become the fourth CEO of Walmart in October of 2008. Well, many of those listening would remember that October of 2008 was a very, very tumultuous time in the world. The economy's crashing, housing market, stock market was spiraling downward, and I was being welcomed into the new job. But it was interesting because at the same time, Walmart was still growing and building stores, but business was changing, in particular the retail business.
Right.
We had been investing in e-commerce, but we needed to ramp it up even more, which we did throughout that period of time. But I think a lot of times, you know, you invest in change, you invest in people, and sometimes you don't see immediate results. Right. And it took a while, I think, for us to work out all of that. We kept investing because we knew it was the right thing to do. Fortunately, since my retirement, I've been really pleased to see how the company has continued to invest, has continued to make change, and it's really providing a great option for customers. I think the real strength of Walmart and a strength that is being leveraged today is the combination of the physical stores and the digital environment. So both online and in-store working together. My wife and I today are some of the best customers because we buy online and I still love to go to the store. So we do both. I'm the one that usually goes to the store because I volunteer for that because I really enjoy seeing people and still the experience of being in a retail store. But we also order a great deal of our product from Walmart online.
So you've used the word people a number of times in the last couple of minutes, and you're clearly a people person. Anybody who wants to be a greeter at church and walk into a store and so forth when you wouldn't really have to do that. So investing in people is a phrase you used maybe a minute ago or so. Can you describe how someone can lead a corporation with 2.2 million people? And I know, obviously, you didn't get to know everyone. You had a small circle, I think maybe 10 or 12 people that you invested in. But how do you lead a corporation of that size?
Clearly, I invested more of my time in the senior leadership of the company. But I also really enjoyed being out in the stores or distribution centers or talking to the Walmart truck drivers or others because I really wanted to know the environment, the culture, all the way through the company and not just be isolated, you know, with those that would be in senior leadership. So part of the the longstanding culture of Walmart that the founder of Walmart, Sam Walton, set in motion when he started the company was to be out in the stores and with the people on the front line. I think you learn more about the actual culture and you see how's it working from senior leadership all the way through mid-management down to the front line when you actually be out and experience it firsthand by talking to the frontline associates. And I really enjoyed that. And it's just part of the way that we would do business at Walmart. We'd spend a lot of time in the stores and distribution centers, but then we'd come back and huddle and compare notes and talk about what do we do better. And we spent a lot of time talking about culture and values and what are the real important values of the company, because we thought that's what's really important. And is it getting down to the cashiers and to the frontline associates in the company?
Yeah, that's obviously important. And you can't simply sit in your office and say, these are our values. You've got to see how it's being practiced. Some people call that management by walking around, right?
That's right.
And I think that's definitely part of the Walmart culture. I've read accounts of Sam Walton, you know, showing up in a flannel shirt, driving up in a beat up truck and going to get light bulbs and, paper towels and you know, keeping his hat pulled down so nobody recognized him. So that's continued. So let me ask about the way your faith impacted all of this. How do you do justice and love mercy, if we can quote Micah? How do you do justice and love mercy to 2.2 million people?
Well, that's a great scripture quote from Micah, and I love that. And I think it starts with, again, how do I relate to those that I work with most closely, the senior leadership? Then how do they relate to their next level of leadership? And so it becomes a multiplying effect all the way through to the frontline associates. And then you check that out with by management, by walking around, as you said. So do you feel that when you really experience the frontline associates? But it has to start with your relationship with those that you work with most closely. So clearly I tried to be fair. I tried to invest in development of people, empowering people, communication, strategy, collaborative thinking, and all the things that goes with working together as a team. You know, I would say that, you know, and I've always liked sports. I like competition. I like to win, though. I don't like competition when you lose. Mm-hmm. And I've always found that, you know, when you really have a great teamwork and the team is working together toward common goals, you have a better chance of winning. So I think starting with the senior leadership, as you said, Dad, even those 10 or 12 senior leaders that I work with most closely.
So you would say, if I'm hearing you correctly, you would say then something like this: if the CEO shouts at people and orders things without really consulting or asking enough questions of his people, that those 12 people, let's say, that he works with are going to behave reasonably similarly on down the line. Whereas if you are carefully listening, assuming you don't know everything, assuming they know things you need to know, treating them with respect, they are in turn going to treat the people around them with respect. So you might say, just love your neighbors yourself.
That's right.
Really lived out with 12 people is going to lead them to lead 144 people, and then they'll, what's 144 times 12? 160, right. Whatever, 1,684, whatever the number is. And then on down the road till you're at 20,000 and 200,000. That's the approach, yes?
That's the approach. And then that approach generally works. There are exceptions. And then when you find the exceptions, you have to deal with the exceptions. And the exceptions where someone doesn't really model that kind of leadership can show up anywhere in the system. Mm-hmm. And it might show up as a senior leader. It might show up in middle management, or it might show up even at a store manager level. And of course, when you find those that are not on board with the company values and the company approach with dealing with people, then that has to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Dealt with means, first of all, you tell them, you give them
right.
a chance to improve, yes, right?
Absolutely.
And try to coach them. And if they persist, then...
Then a change has to be made.
Yeah.
You know, because you can be harming other people you can be setting bad role models and creating more of a problem throughout the organization the longer you put up with it. So you do have to identify the problem, communicate the problem, coach the problem. But then if the problem's not solved, then you have to deal with the problem.
Right. So I've had this conversation with any number of business leaders, and some of them just feel horrible about dismissing somebody who doesn't respond to the coaching. But in a sense, they think it's not loving. But you have to love everybody in the organization, not just that one person. And sometimes to protect 100 people, you have to let one person find another job. That sounds like what you're saying.
That's right. And I do for sure feel bad when someone has to be told that they have to leave their place of employment. But I feel even worse for those people that are harmed by poor leadership.
Right.
And the harm can be very serious to a lot of people and their livelihood.
Yeah, that's right. Let me switch a little bit here for a minute and ask about sharing your faith. Obviously, you can't overtly evangelize or proselytize. You can share your faith when it's appropriate. What would you say to someone who's working in a place like Walmart? And what would you say to a person who maybe is in an environment where Christian faith is not encouraged and they think, well, I have to be totally silent. I have to keep my mouth shut. What would you say to people who are in a corporate environment and you have to be careful, but you still want to let your light shine? What would you say if you had 10, 25-year-old Christians, what would you say to them?
Sure. I'd say, first of all, people are watching more closely what you do, even more than what you say. How you treat people, how you communicate with people, how you serve people. And being a servant leader doesn't require a lot of speeches. It doesn't require you to have to do a lot of loud talking. And you can still be a servant leader and people can come to understand what your foundation is built on in the way that you treat people. And I would say start first by the way that you treat other people.
Mm.
But I also think that in today's world, sometimes Christians are even too hesitant because some of the very best leadership examples come from the Bible.
Yes.
And no reason. I use, for example, the Golden Rule, you've already mentioned it, is a great principle of leadership. And saying the source of it is not a problem.
Right.
And did that in front of thousands of people. And, so I don't feel the need to apologize for reading the Bible and for using quotes from Jesus about the way to treat people. And that's not necessarily evangelizing. And frankly, it even opened up opportunity where people would come and want to talk to me about it a little more.
And right.
Sometimes it's where they were not necessarily believers, but they wanted to understand a little more about where I was coming from. So if they asked questions, it allowed me to answer their questions. So I think there's an appropriate way to be respectful and communicate your faith with people, but without, being illegal, inappropriate, you would have harming people in any way. Clearly, employment and decisions about promotion, things of that nature, you can't consider a person's faith or religion in those kind of areas. And frankly, I think we're even better at evangelizing when we treat all people fairly and equally.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, we would say that people's faith commitments show in the way they behave, and so it shows up indirectly in job reports. If someone's, an angry atheist, let's suppose, it's going to show up, and maybe they won't treat people well. But there's also such a thing as a very kind-hearted atheist as well, and we don't downgrade them for not being theists. So, yeah, that's good. Let me switch over for a minute to the public role that you had. And maybe a couple questions there. First of all, large corporations are always criticized. We know that. Every Fortune 500 company has a target on its back. A lot of false accusations, unfortunately, come your way. And the bigger you are and the higher you are, the more criticisms come your way. How did you handle it, keep your equilibrium when you were criticized?
Well, of course, it's never easy to read the criticism, and Walmart has been, because we've been the Fortune 1 company now for a number of years. And just by being first on the Fortune list every year, it means it's going to come with some criticism, and from a variety of different sources. So the first thing is to just relax and understand the criticism and the source of it. But then quickly, it's important to look in the mirror and say, what can we learn from it? And I always really appreciated when someone could say, we were being criticized for this. And then I could say, but let's pause a moment. And is there any validity to it? Is there anything we can learn from it? Now, sometimes the person answering the question would say there was it's not valid, but we can't learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's a good, as long as we learn from it and we can improve. I mean, every day, and again, I get the founder of Walmart, Sam Walton, credit for this. I think every day he would get up early and he wanted to do something better and improve over the day before. And I think even in facing criticism, it's an opportunity to do something better and improve and learn from those that provide criticism, because sometimes it can be valid and sometimes it can be a learning experience.
My sense is that criticism, even if it's unfair, usually has some thread or grain, at least a grain of truth to it. They may not be saying it well, they may be exaggerating and so forth, but usually they're not completely wrong. I mean, they are completely wrong sometimes.
Exactly.
You remind me of the proverb that says, rebuke a wise man and he will love you.
Right.
But if you rebuke a fool, he won't listen, and then they don't grow. So, you know, we assess, but also recognize that we should listen, even if we're not totally sold on the criticisms that we're receiving.
One of those times I was thinking about sitting at a meeting, and it was a relatively high-level vice president sitting with me and was talking about some criticism we had received. And I remember telling, it was a one-on-one conversation, and I said, we should just count our blessings. And he said, what do you mean count our blessings with this criticism? I said, look at why, part of why we're being criticized is because we are the Fortune 1 company now, and it's been come out, it's published again. We could be working for, and I gave the name of another retailer, which I won't mention now.
Yes.
That within the process of filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy,
right.
They had already filed, they were closing thousands of stores.
Yes.
And I said, would you rather work here or would you rather work there? And I said, maybe we can put up with some criticism
right.
Because we've been blessed in so many ways. Maybe a little bit of criticism is okay.
Well, I mean, of course, when people want to change the way business is done, they may have for example, it might be creation care, right? And so they say Walmart is a big polluter. Well, of course it's a big polluter because it's such a gigantic corporation. It can't, I mean, you make things. And when you make things, there's water runoff, and I'm sure you try to be careful. But they're going to go after the biggest corporations because that has the greatest leverage and they'll get more attention than if they went after a firm that sells, let's say, $25 million worth of goods in a year, which is not, I mean, $25 million is not nothing, but it's very, very small compared to Walmart.
Your example of the environment is a perfect example. And I really give credit to my predecessor because at that time, and this was, I guess I was in a job, I was in charge of Walmart International at that time and reporting to the CEO. And at that time, we were being criticized exactly as you said for environmental impact. And I remember my boss, Lee Scott, really took on the mantle to say, but we can do better.
Mm-hmm.
We can improve the environmental impact that we're having because of our scale. We can even influence packaging. We can influence waste. We can influence efficiency. And we ended up doing a lot of things because he took that approach. And we did have a much more positive impact on the environment.
And of course, I mean, I'm not asking about his faith, but certainly that's an expression of your faith. I mean, God made this world,
that's
and
right.
We should take the best care of what we possibly can. That's what Genesis chapter 2 says. We tend the garden, and that means farms and factories and all the rest.
It's really easy for me to be a believer that we need to be good stewards of what we've been given. And of course, this world that we live in is part of that we have a stewardship responsibility.
Hi, I'm John Perkins, Executive Director of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. You've been listening to our podcast, Working with Dan Doriani. The Center also offers conferences on faith and work throughout the United States. Our goal is to equip formal and informal leaders to make a difference in their corner of the world. We equip Christian leaders to run 10-hour faith and work cohorts on three continents. Please visit our website at faithandworkstl.org to see how your church or organization can form a faith and work cohort for people who have, or aspire to, a leadership role in their workplace. Now, back to Dan.
Let me stay with the influence of a big corporation. Can I just ask you, what is it like to be the man standing up and addressing the public at an annual stockholders meeting, and you know that if you say the right things, it's going to redound to your glory and stock prices may go up and people will be so happy, and if you say the wrong thing or maybe something that's right and true but is not popular, that it'll have an enormous impact. What's it like to be in those big meetings? I mean, a follow-up meeting, but what's it like to meet with, you know, the President of America, United States, and governors and so forth, again, because of your position? But start with annual stockholders meeting. What's that like?
Well, in particular for Walmart, because Walmart does have a really, really big annual stockholders meeting, because we invite thousands of associates. Our only associates are invited to come as store ambassadors, and they come to Bentonville, Arkansas for that week and go through a lot of training. And the Friday morning is the big meeting, and there are about 15,000 people there.
That's a lot of people.
So the CEO address with all the Wall Street analysts, shareholders, big investors, and thousands of your own associates in the room is quite a task. And it starts with a lot of prayer.
Yes.
And I would tell you, I don't think I prayed nearly as much as I did that week about, in even that time, that I would be up on the stage and really just pray for God's favor and a peace and comfort. But also tell you, it then would take preparation. There's no substitute for a business leader to being prepared. And so it did require work, study, coaching. I would receive coaching myself from multiple other sources about the message that I would be delivering and how we would deliver it. And I would practice it just like a football team would practice going into a big game.
Okay, good.
So all of that would come together. And I would have to say that the day after that meeting is always the most enjoyable day of my year.
I thought you were going to say you're the most tired after that day.
Well, I'd usually get up early the day after and would go out, and we'd have a morning meeting the day after the shareholders meeting.
Okay.
But then immediately after that, on Saturday morning, I would go out, and that'd be one of those rounds of golf.
Okay.
That I enjoyed playing, because it was my way to kind of be able to turn it all off.
Yes.
And just go back and be Mike again.
So I just want to say one thing, that, you know, about 90% of the people who listen to this podcast do not watch the video, but I want to say that Mike has been smiling kind of the whole time. And he was smiling a little bit more when he was talking about this this week of the shareholders meeting, because it may be daunting, but he doesn't look back on it with regret or terror. It was a good experience. Based on the smile on your face, that's what I'm saying.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So what is it like to meet politicians who want to talk about Walmart and its impact on the economy, on the employment stats? I mean, you've met with presidents and governors and senators. You've been on Capitol Hill. What is that like? And let me say it this way. What would you imagine? We've got some young people here who are going to be in leadership positions. What would you, maybe not tell me what it was like for you, but what would you say you learned and would pass on to people who have to represent themselves before an important but possibly critical, possibly friendly audience?
First, I would say to be thankful that here in America that we have the system that we do, because I think we are blessed with the way our country was formed and the way that our system of government works. In some cases, it could be better probably, but the overall foundation, and when a business leader is called to be a participant, is to be thankful that someone wants to know your opinion.
Right.
And be thankful for the opportunity and the platform that you're given. You know, and then I would say again, prepare when I would go and speak with the president or those others in Washington or even at state level. It's important to prepare and know what you're doing and know what you're talking about and to have credibility when you're in that format also. I had the chance, of course, to meet the leaders from all around the world. And again, understanding their local situation and how Walmart may interface with them is very, very important. And with Walmart scale, I had an unusual opportunity to meet some leaders even that are still in office today that in some places where Walmart doesn't have any stores, like in Russia, for example. Right. We don't operate stores in Russia, and we haven't ever had any there. But in some cases, interfacing with government leaders is an opportunity and it's a blessing, which requires prayer and preparation, like many other things.
Well, I'm imagining that, you know, your business goes a certain way and you're totally on top of your business, but you don't know what the leaders of Thailand or Kazakhstan are going to ask you. It's not going to have to do what you're doing every day, I'm guessing. So you have to understand what their background is, what their needs are.
Yeah, and you do. And that's where a good staff and on the team can help you prepare. And obviously, companies that are larger can probably afford even more.
Right.
That support. A very small company may not have the staff support, but it still means a leader needs to prepare to go into any meeting, understanding the other side of the table and where a person might be asking you questions.
Yeah.
I can remember my first meeting with President Barack Obama, and he had just been elected, and he really wanted to talk about collective bargaining and why Walmart was not represented through any collective bargaining agreements in the United States. And it gave me an opportunity to explain our approach with our hourly associates and the fact that 70% of management at Walmart in the U.S. started with the company as an hourly associate, and that the system was working. And we had some interesting conversations about that.
that's a euphemism, interesting conversations. I'm sure he stood his ground and you stood your ground and maybe you both learned from each other. Let me, Mike, this has been great, but we're kind of close to the end of our time. Let me go to rapid fire questions, okay?
Sure.
You're on the elevator with a young person, young man or woman, who realizes who you are and they're thinking about a career in retailing. What would you say in less than a minute to someone who wants to lead in retailing?
Yeah, I would say what I was told in my very first interview by my very first mentor in retailing in 1972. It's all about people. And if you take care of people, both the people you work with and the customers you serve, then you'll do well in retailing. But if you worry about taking care of yourself first, then retailing may not be the best opportunity for you.
That sounds pretty close to biblical wisdom to me, right? You gotta love your neighbors yourself.
Right.
I am my brother's keeper. Okay, number two, if you wanted to recommend to this same person on the elevator the best writer on business leadership, they could be a believer or not a believer, but you know they're expressing principles really well. Who would you recommend? One or two?
Yeah, I give them two approaches. One, it could be an author who is a writer, but then also real leaders who have led and then wrote about their leadership. So in the author category, you know, I'd say John Maxwell, Jim Collins, certainly on the leadership side, those have led great businesses or organizations and then wrote about leadership. Then I'd probably say Sam Walton and read his book, Made in America. But I'd also say John Wooden, John Wooden, the coach of UCLA,
right.
The winningest basketball coach in history. But his writing about leadership, because he practiced it. So that's two different approaches to reading.
Yeah. I had the privilege of hearing Wooden speak about basketball coaching one time after he'd stopped coaching, and it was very informative.
Right.
Okay, my last question is more like a fun one. What would you like to celebrate in 5 years?
My wife and I are really blessed with our kids and family, with five grandkids, and the fact that all of them are really committed to their trust in Jesus and their walking with the Lord, and would love to see that continue, grow, and develop. And even as they expand their family, we've got our first grandson, first wedding of a grandchild this coming summer, and we love the new member that'll be joining our family. And then over the next 5 years, you know, there may be others. And
yes,
I think we would love to see that expanded family grow, but also growing all of us to grow closer to the Lord at the same time.
Yes. That's a great answer. Mike, it's been a pleasure to visit with you in this way and to have you share some of your wisdom from your career. I thank you for your candor and your warm spirit. It's been great to have you.
Well, thank you, Dan. It's a blessing to be with you, and look forward to greeting you at church again sometime.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Working with Dan Doriani is a production of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. We seek to promote faithfulness in the workplace, in education, in discipleship, and in the stories of believers who've applied their faith at work. If you want to put your faith to work and change your corner of the world, visit our website, the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. Look for faithandworkstl.org. That's one word. We'll help you start a cohort with like-minded believers who also want to practice their faith at work. This podcast is donor-supported. To keep us going, please donate on our website. Maybe more importantly, you can support us by listening, by subscribing, by sharing, by liking us, by posting us on your favorite platform, or go old school and tell a friend.